Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. This is a super special intro right now. We've got my friend and Device Talks managing editor, Kayleen Brown, here with me. Kayleen, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the intro. This is exciting.
Yes, it's always nice to spend time with you and with our friends, our MedTech friends.
Exactly. We've got a jam-packed show. You are featured prominently in a couple, so I wanted to have you in the intro as well. But we use this little time here. Kayleen, have you listened to the podcast before? Do you know what you do with the intro?
Fun fact, I produce the podcast, but I've never listened to a single one. No, that's not true at all.
What?
That's not true at all. No,
she
no.
Saw my heart just sink.
I am very, very familiar with the Device Talks podcast network and all that you, Tom Salemi, have done for the industry. And I love Device Talks Weekly.
I wasn't looking for that. We're looking to promote what's coming up. So, good news, the MedTech Nerd Tour is scheduled for fall, Kayleen. We've got a full tour date. It's going to be great. You've got several dates. We'll be at MedTech Vision on September 9th.
Yeah. Tuesday, September 9th in Menlo Park.
So we'll be kicking off there. Then we'll be taking the tour to AdvaMed's The MedTech Conference meeting in San Diego. And then, of course, we'll kick it off with the grand finale at Device Talks West on October 15th and 16th. At the Santa Clara Convention Center. So we'll start posting our MedTech Nerd Tour photos and selfies. And I guess we could invite people to do the same. I mean, the MedTech Nerd Legion is wide and far. So we invite other MedTech nerds to take part.
Yes, please. I mean, a membership of two is not as fun as a membership of hundreds and thousands. And join us, MedTech Nerds. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have me and you and Chris Newmarker and Sean Hooley, our newest nerd, will be part of the tour as well. So we've got a jam-packed episode for you today. We'll open up with the Newmarkers Newsmakers, of course. And then we'll have your interview, Kayleen, with Mike Montevoukas of Acuity MD.
Yeah, for this segment of the Future of MedTech Opportunities, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Mike Montevoukas, CEO of Acuity MD, and we're going to be talking about what the future of AI and automation can do for MedTech innovation. And I'm going to give you a nice little spoiler, but we believe that there might be some democratization happening when it comes to MedTech innovation. So tune in to that 10-minute segment and see how the industry is going to reshape yet again in a way that is hopeful, is more accessible. It's just a really exciting way to think, and it feels very achievable. So,
yeah, no, Mike's great. Mike has been an early supporter of Device Talks. We were with Acuity MD at the start, and separate from your conversation, I saw that Acuity MD made Forbes' next $1 billion startup list. So, pretty cool.
I didn't know that. That makes me so happy and so well deserved.
Yes,
I mean, it's not even just preferential treatment for our supporters. It is just the fact of what they're doing is really important for the industry. And they do it with such, we've talked about how MedTech is, it's the industry of service. So we're all here because we want to prolong life and save lives. And the team at Acuity MD really feels that way as well. So that just, aces, congrats team.
And following your conversation with Mike Montevoukas, we'll be talking with Yvonne Bockelman, the new executive director at MedTech Women, relatively new. She's been on for 6 months or so, about the MedTech Vision event we alluded to a little bit earlier. So she'll give us the highlights of that. And then I will have my keynote conversation with Tatiana Alexandrova. She is the CEO of Subsense, which is a very cool BCI company that actually is using nanoparticles instead of wires to they hope create an access route to the brain. So lots of great stuff on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly podcast, and Kayleen and I will walk you through it in just a minute. But before we begin the podcast, please remember to join us at Device Talks West again, which is going to be the final stop of the MedTech Nerd Tour on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. You can go to west.devicetalks.com to register. Kayleen, you ready to get this podcast started?
Let's do it.
All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmark, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well. You know, Tom, I've always thought that, you know, when you're trying to figure out what to wear for the day, I mean, if black is always a classy color, pretty mm-hmm. much, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's a sign of intelligence when people wear black as well. I think it shows yes. that, you know, they are committing their intellectual power to real important world decisions and not.
I mean, university like professors of the Middle Ages wore black.
Steve Jobs wore black. Darth Vader got a lot done.
Grim Reaper. Yeah.
Batman.
I mean, that's business right there. I mean,
exactly.
That's like, you know, crime is going down.
All the best people are wearing black. So.
That's right.
Including Chris and myself. That's why I think that's he's right. bringing
yes.
it up. Yeah.
Yes.
So, Chris Newmarker, we've got a jam-packed episode and a lot of good, exciting news, I think really kind of milestone news on Mass Device and drug delivery business this week. So let's kick this off. What's number five on the Newmarker's Newsmakers?
Hey, number five on the list. We've got Modular Medical, unveiling their next-gen insulin pump patch, the Pivot. And they, as well as, you know, they had the news that they plan to, submit Pivot in October with the FDA. So another next-gen technology coming to the insulin pump space.
Very cool. I think it's interesting the names that these diabetes products are taking, like Twist with Sequel and now Pivot. Like, they're sounding very consumer-y and less device-y. Like
diabetes is so consumer-y. I mean, which makes sense. I mean, it's
you live Abbott, every Libre, like, is it's consumer-ish, but like Pivot, like just
Pivot
sounds very active. And like, do you want to pivot? Yes, then use Pivot. So good name.
I mean, something like a G6 or a G7, that sounds more like an iPhone or
that
something
does.
Like
exactly.
That's just like, yeah, we're this. So they're Dexcom's the Apple of CGMs, I guess. So yeah, and then insulin pumps. Yeah, we're getting more of these, like a Twist Pivot. It's cool.
I think if anyone needs a name for a device, they should certainly come to us. We're happy to help. We're geniuses with words and stuff, right?
I mean, that's the word I think of us, you know, geniuses. when I think of something like, you know, Einstein and mm-hmm. discussing physics with Niels Bohr, us too. Yeah.
Us too. Great. Just like those guys. Yeah. Number four.
Freud and Jung.
Abbott and Costello.
Abbott and Costello.
Yes. All the great minds.
Larry Curl. Oh, wait, there were three of them.
There were three of those. Number four.
Oh, boy. Our listeners are like, oh gosh, what? Why did I do this?
Number four.
Number four, we have Setpoint Medical raising $140 million to support their the commercialization of their neuromodulation technology. They actually call it neuroimmune modulation, technology, because it, you know, uses like a implantable integrated neurostim system to stimulate the vagus nerve to activate anti-inflammatory and immune restorative pathways in the body and to treat rheumatoid arthritis, but they're also planning to use some of these proceeds to kind of advance their pipeline to look beyond rheumatoid arthritis with this technology. So, mm-hmm.
So Setpoint, I think, is just one of those, legacy is not a good term. It's a med tech that's been around for a long time with a lot of great promise, and it's nice to see the promise being delivered. I think this was one of the milestone moments I was pointing to, and I criticize New York Times and company for not giving MedTech its due, but they did have a nice front page article on Setpoint talking about the benefits or the potential benefits of the device. And kudos to them for giving MedTech the proper shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually noticed today they have an article probably on their homepage, the treating chronic pain.
Yep.
with deep brain stimulation. So yeah, New York Times is like giving thanks to them for making me happy that I'm a subscriber. So good for them.
Yeah,
thank
exactly.
You.
For waking up and seeing the cool stuff some medtech does. So
exactly.
What's number three, Chris Newmarker?
Hey, number three on the list, this is a little bit of a tough news. We have FDA issuing, an alert over updated instructions for Boston Scientific's Watchman Access, for certain Boston Scientific Watchman Access, systems. The FDA was saying that this instructions update comes as a result of an issue in which Boston Scientific was reporting like 120 serious injuries and 17 deaths that could be potentially associated with this. So at least we're getting these instructions updated on the access system. And Watchman just really, interesting, technology, for a left atrial appendage closure, which is something, they often do with, it's something they seek to do with, with heart procedures, because, you're raising chances of AFib with heart procedures. You do an LAAC, that reduces the chance of stroke from, any kind of like clotting, associated with that AFib. So at least it's good to see that, things are getting, that Boston Scientific is, working to resolve this issue.
Yeah. And Sean Hooley, who wrote this article and wrote the set point article, and I believe wrote the pivot article.
Yes.
Writes that, according to the notice, this is what Boston Scientific instructed customers to do. According to the notice, the risk of air embolism remains acute in nature and limited to the duration of the implant procedure.
Yeah.
Patients who already received a Watchman device need no additional management. And Boston Scientific told customers that it intends to add the updated instructions to Watchman physician training. So, yeah. So they're on top of it. Yeah, this is not the best contrast with my rant about the media not highlighting MedTech's wins. This is this goes with the territory. There's lessons to be learned and adjustments to be made, and Boston Scientific appears to be on top of it.
Yeah, totally.
And the FDA. So good for
that. And the FDA.
So. All right. What's number two, Chris Newmark?
So number two, it's another Sean story. It's Nyxoah. Winning an FDA nod for their sleep apnea neuromod system, this brings another product on the market, here in the United States that competes with Inspire Medical's implantable system. Nyxoah is implantable. It's like a little, something that they a stimulator that they implant, just below the chin, but kind of the neat thing about Nyxoah is that it's leadless, and it doesn't have a battery. It gets charged by a wearable that you wear under your chin while you're sleeping. There's definitely some competition going on now, and Inspire is actually suing Nyxoah for IP infringement. So we'll be following how that all goes, I've always good to see competition on the market.
Sure. And as you reported years ago, ResMed had taken a small stake in Nyxoah.
Yeah.
And I think still holds on to it. I think I saw somewhere it was less than 5% now, but definitely something that ResMed is looking at providing some competition in this space. So it'll be interesting to see if what becomes of that investment, if it grows or it leads to something else in the future. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll keep following this for sure.
All right, Chris Newmarker, what is number one on the Newmarker's Newsmakers?
Number one on the list is, Sean caught a Financial Times report that OpenAI, plans to invest in a new brain-computer interface venture called Merge Labs. Merge Labs is reportedly, looking to raise $250 million from OpenAI and others. And, Elon Musk's, the Elon Musk-backed venture Neuralink is another big player in the space. So this, you know, if this Financial Times reporting pans out. I mean, this is another example of, you know, Sam Altman going head to head with Elon Musk and, you know, in a technology area.
Absolutely. And just the idea of OpenAI having a BCI implant, as noted on LinkedIn, it's slightly terrifying to a person like me. So, and the name Merge Labs just sort of implies that we're
Merge Labs, like
that will be bringing bringing AI and I guess natural intelligence together as one. So we'll see.
The merger of humans and artificial intelligence.
We'll see where things go. I'm letting my scientific sci-fi sensibilities take a hold.
You don't want to let artificial intelligence into your head, Tom. I mean, you don't.
I can barely manage the intelligence I've got. Like, I don't need any more. Thank you very much.
And we are geniuses, right?
We're wearing black.
You know, exactly. We're wearing black. I mean, we use the phrase quantum mechanics, you know.
But interesting that Sam Altman is part of the medtech community. And as you said, another interesting street fight between him and Elon Musk. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, things are getting exciting in the medtech space for sure.
Totally. Absolutely.
All right, Chris Neumacher, great job. Thanks so much.
Yeah, anytime, man. Catch you.
All right, Chris Neumacher, thanks for those excellent Neumacher's newsmakers. Now back here with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Kayleen, we're going to hear from AcuityMD's Mike Monavoukas. Anything you should know going into this conversation?
Just that the future for medtech innovation is bright, more equitable for all, hopefully, and more access. So no one can explain it better than AcuityMD's Mike Monavoukas. Welcome to another segment of the Future of MedTech Opportunities, or FOMO. And this week, we're going to be talking about democratizing MedTech innovation. And I'm so thrilled to bring in our special guest, Mike Monavoukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Kayleen, it's great to see you again. Great to be here.
What got you interested in MedTech innovation, and in particular, democratizing MedTech innovation? What spoke to you?
Kayleen, my first startup was a medical device company, and I just remember stitching together all these different data sets, doing research on the FDA website, and really trying to build a case for why this technology should exist to convince investors, but also to build relationships with prospects and learn from the market. And I remember this one moment at the Brigham and Women's Hospital here in Boston, where I was set up on a call with someone who did not want to meet with me at all. She was doing someone a favor. And I was in the lobby of the Brigham with the prototype of the product in my pocket. And I'd done a lot of research on the Brigham, their outcomes, the clinical studies they were enrolled in. And I was able to bring all that research into the conversation and really tailor my pitch about this new technology, you know, to personalize it to what they were going through and to build empathy with the clinic there. And, you know, ultimately, my startup failed, but that relationship taught me a lot, not just about the commercial side, but also about the product development side and the clinical needs that clinician was facing. And so that moment really lit a fire under me. What if we could automate that level of preparation, research, you know, data manipulation and insights for every entrepreneur, rep, you know, rookie or veteran, to forge deeper relationships in the medtech industry faster. And that vision is ultimately what became AcuityMD.
Okay, so this is what led you into AcuityMD. So can you take us through maybe some of those challenges, like in that one experience and other experiences that you feel have really impacted how innovation is being developed today? And like, in a sense, like what exactly is broken when it comes to medtech innovation?
So it's really expensive, really time consuming to get new products approved, get new products out to market. And I think for decades, med tech innovation has historically been run as sort of this top down relay race where you've got R&D teams that are really investing deeply into these breakthrough devices and true innovations, and then sort of pass the baton over to commercial teams once, you know, the FDA approves the product. And that, you know, in premise and, you know, on paper, that handoff is really clean, but it's really messy in reality. And actually a lot of insights that could be used for innovation are kind of lost at that juncture from, you know, R&D to commercial. And, you know, the point I always like coming back to is that, like, every day, you know, sales reps, hundreds of thousands of sales reps across the country have thousands of conversations with surgeons, nurses, supply chain leaders. They are constantly out there in the field observing what's going on, how care is being provided today, what the gaps are. And so buried in those chats, buried in all that insight, are the next big ideas.
Definitely understand the challenges and where we need to go. But can you help me understand where we are today with technical advances or achievements? What's the state of the union?
Yeah, you know, I think today we are starting to make really great progress on synthesizing across a variety of different pieces of data and tailoring the insights specific to a use case that, you know, drives action. And so I know it's a lot of lingo. What I mean by that is, you know, that moment at the Brigham where I built the call plan and researched, did all that research, that's now available in a click, right? And what we do at Acuity MD ingests all sorts of product data, territory, you know, quota data, live market signals, and tailors a pitch personalized to the rep and to the surgeon that they're about to meet with, you know, suggested talking points and, you know, next steps. And so that's saving people time. And I think that type of insight, connecting data and tailoring it to a use case or a workflow, is where we are today. And we have our, you know, call planning is one use case. The other one is understanding referral pathways all across the care continuum. This is really difficult and messy data to because it's longitudinal to really visualize, but it's really important for med tech commercial leaders to understand who influences, you know, the patient pathway and, you know, where along that care pathway, you know, is there a greater need to educate on the benefits of a new technology? So that's another area where there's all of this data and how do we like package it and make it insightful for end users to, you know, drive access and adoption of their technologies. And the third area that I think all this data is, you know, we're sort of tailoring it to use cases around understanding cross-sell opportunities, but also white space opportunities within a company's product portfolio, and really serving those up, you know, crunching through all sorts of different data and serving those up for strategic decisions like, hey, should we buy a product that fits into our product portfolio and, you know, broadens it? Or should we have two of our business units collaborate to, say, better serve an ASC that has a broader need for products and a broader need for surgical specialties?
So that's a lot of progress. And it feels like we're at a pivot point now. What could we see or expect maybe in the near future? Let's call it like 2 to 3 years. What could we expect to see?
You know, the initial sort of phase zero is you have all this data. How do you make it insightful and easy to understand? That's actually where the name Acuity came from, the ability to see and understand things easily and clearly. And so that was definitely phase zero. I think where we're at now with the AI technologies that are emerging is that, you know, across not just commercial, but R&D, quality and regulatory teams, we're going to see a massive automation of the administrative drag that weighs on these individuals across the function. So these are things like automating CRM updates or automating analytics or business insights or auto-generating FDA documentation. And obviously humans are a core part of, you know, review and making sure that, you know, all that information is accurate and the AI system isn't hallucinating. But a lot of the heavy work and the administrative work, I believe in the near term will be handled by AI agents, which will free humans to do what they do best, which is to form strategy, build relationships, look around corners, plan and relate to one another and really build those frontline relationships that matter and, you know, in learning from the market.
What about looking into the future, Mike? So no holds barred. This is just your personal opinion. We're not going to hold you to it. But let's say in a decade from now, what could we see?
And I think, you know, underpinning all this, like Kayleen, you've got what, a 3-year-old, I think you were saying?
Good memory. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So I've got a 2-year-old. My son just turned 2. And, you know, when he was born, I wrote him a letter capturing what the world looked like, you know, when he was born a couple summers ago. ChatGPT had just come out. And in that letter, I sort of joked, you know, to him about, would you ever have to write an essay? Like, are you ever going to drive a car without using AI? And, you know, rereading that letter even just 2 years later reminds me how fast technology evolves and, you know, how quickly new technologies like, you know, co-pilots or, you know, the LLMs or self-driving cars can embed in day-to-day experiences like writing or driving. It's like very fascinating how quickly, if it really nails the use case, how quickly these technologies can disseminate. So, you know, I think in the medium term, I think what's going to happen, so we mentioned, you know, short term kind of automating insights and making it very easy to crunch through data, you know, kind of near term automating work and making, you know, giving that administrative time back. I think in the medium term, what's going to happen is these AI systems are just going to be able to collect a ton of different information from the field in new ways. Instead of having sales reps manually enter information into a form, AI systems might just be able to have natural language conversations with sales reps that then, you know, can tag, you know, pain points in the market to then cluster different types of innovations or different types of product improvements that could that could benefit surgeons. So I think the AI systems will evolve to collect data and cluster data and sift through things like adverse event reports or product complaints or usage trends or clinical literature to really understand what's going on in the market with these products. And then one thing that I think AI systems are really good at, if you look at some of the big, you know, med tech platform innovations, you know, you have things like stents and lithotripsy and balloon catheters. These are technologies that were applied not just to one, you know, part of the anatomy, but to multiple specialties, right? Lithotripsy is a great example, right? From kidney stones to shockwave now, and, you know, the acquisition by J&J. And, you know, that cross specialty pattern matching is something that I think, you know, medical specialties are just not great at doing themselves. They're trained and kind of siloed for good reason into their specific track. But I think AI systems are going to be really, really good at really understanding, hey, there's a technology that has this impact on the anatomy. Where else could it be applied? Where else are there clinical issues and adverse outcomes where this technology specifically can fix? And so I know I'm, you know, taking a while to answer your long-term, you know, vision here, Kayleen, but I think in 10 years, we're going to have products and technologies that have been proposed by AI systems and that are in the market, you know, being sold and being actively used by surgeons, and that the AI system will have collected the data, connected the dots, and proposed the concept for then humans to act on.
Ooh, that is really encouraging and exciting. And you know how much I love artificial intelligence. I think that in itself is just the soundbite. That's what the future is. The future of medtech and medtech innovation is democratization. So with that in mind, thank you so much, Mike Montevukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD, for joining us on the Future of Medtech Opportunities. I loved every second of it with you.
Thanks, Kayleen. It was great to be here.
All right, Kayleen, great job with your interview with Mike Montevukas. Why don't you tee up our next interview?
Yes, we have had the opportunity of sitting down with MedTech Women's newest executive director, Yvonne Bockelman. We chatted about MedTech Vision coming up September 9th and how excited we are to have that be one of our stops of the MedTech Nerd Tour. Yvonne talks about the program and what to expect at MedTech Vision.
Well, Yvonne Bockelman, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here. Appreciate it.
It's great to have MedTech Women back on the podcast. And in just a few weeks, Kayleen and I will be out at MedTech Vision, which is a fantastic event. And we're very excited to connect and reconnect with folks there. So, Yvonne, you're new to MedTech Women, relatively new. Please introduce yourself to our community. Tell us how you came to be to join the organization.
Yeah, thanks so much for that. I've been around healthcare forever, my entire career. In a quick snapshot, I started on the provider side in hospital administration early in my career.
Okay.
Thought I was going to stick with that. I loved it, but got recruited out eventually and went into healthcare IT for a while. And then about, I'm going to sound like I'm 100 years old, by Last two decades, I've been in med tech and medical device. I started with the Big Blues with Medtronic, and spent a number of years there, and then spent 11 years with Zimmer Biomet in leadership positions. Left there after president and GM of several businesses and functions for them, and decided I wanted to make a shift. I think it was the post-COVID movement, and decided I wanted to go to a smaller company or a startup, and I did. I became CEO of a small musculoskeletal startup, and I did that for a few years, and that's a lot of work. It's exhausting work doing a startup, so took a break from that and doing some board work, some advisory work, and this opportunity presented for MedTech Women. And it really was sort of the culmination of several things in my career, kind of like a passion pivot, if you will. Having spent my device time in spine and orthopedics, you know, have to say it was predominantly male-dominated. It still is. And so I've always had attention to being able to mentor women and see if there's paths for women to excel when they want to. And so coming into MedTech Women, which has this platform of networking and content and education and promoting women, was just up my alley. So I'm thrilled to be here. Been about 6 months already.
How did that 6 months just fly by? I feel like it was yesterday when we found the news that there'll be the transition over, and we're so excited to have you. I have to assume, Yvonne, that you've explored or have participated in MedTech Women's programming before. Have you attended MedTech Vision? Have you done any of the virtual events or networking events with MedTech Women prior to your role now?
Yeah, so I've never done MedTech Vision, so super excited to experience that here in a few weeks.
Wow.
I know. I have been to other MedTech Women events, certainly their breakfast events at LSI previously, those kind of things. But I hadn't been an active member, honestly, and I hadn't been to Vision, MedTech Vision. So I'm super excited about those events. I've heard nothing but great things. And true to even my coming on board 6 months ago, just talking to individuals I know who were involved in the organization, talking to some of the sponsors, the feedback was so incredible. It just, the excitement just built then and continues to build.
Well, I have to say that Tom and I have been so lucky to have attended MedTech Vision multiple times now. And I think the walk away every single time with me and Tom is that there's this palpable energy the in-person MedTech Vision that you just can't get anywhere else. And it is no exaggeration to say that you show up and it's one of the most beautiful places in the entire world. And I know that we'll go into MedTech Vision 2025, but it's really one of the most beautiful locations. And you have this this excitement, and you're meeting your community, and then you're laughing, and absolutely no exaggeration, you're crying midday, and everybody's holding hands, and then by the end of the day, you're back to laughing, and it feels like this beautiful whirlwind by the end of that day. So we are excited that you're going to be experiencing your own. But with that, will you give us the details where, when, and how our audience can get involved and join us?
Sure. So the event, MedTech Vision 2025, is September 9th in Menlo Park at the Rosewood. There is still some limited slots available, some registrations available, which you can register actually in person and virtual. We are limited to 250 people on site, but both registration options are available via the medtechwomen.org website. And yeah, we'd encourage you to jump on that if you're interested. We'd love to have you there. I think, as you said it, between the panels, the patient keynote interview, the executive interview, all of that has so much content, so much emotion, so much relatability, I think, for individuals in the audience that you do go through that whole series of emotions, and I'm really looking forward to it.
That's great. And looking at the programming, I see you've got the executive interview with Laura Mori, Senior Vice President, Chief Scientific and Medical Officer at Medtronic. She's an amazing person, and I've had the good fortune of interviewing her in the past. And at the end, you're giving the Farrell and Powell Award, which is always, I think, just a a really special time to stop and recognize a long time contribution to the industry. Is that generally a surprise who's going to get it? Do you have any hints?
It is a surprise. I would love to give you the scoop, but no. The selection has been made. The woman has been notified, and we are super excited. Everyone will automatically, I think, concur with how the votes went and who was selected. And she is also very excited. So that will cap a great day is giving out that award and that recognition.
Is there a particular panel discussion that you're looking forward to, or that you think is going to have, in your words, a lot of relevance to the audience and maybe a lot of connection?
Yeah, so just to back up, the theme for the day is revolution, not evolution. And so really speaking to the multiple facets of transformation that are affecting the med tech world. And we all know the pace is always crazy. There's a lot going on. But the more tools, technology, infrastructure changes that are happening, the pace is just pretty incredible. So we're really looking to touch on some of those topics. So from a tech perspective, obviously talking about AI, because who isn't? And want to be careful about that, because we didn't want to be just another AI discussion, but really delve into it in a different way with key companies and panelists who are experiencing it and working with it today. So really excited about that. Our second panel is going to be dealing with strategic partnerships and M&A. It just keeps getting more and more creative. I think that's going to be a great conversation. Having been with large companies doing acquisitions, having been part of, small companies looking for that, I think where can those relationships go and how can they benefit each other and what's the future look like in that respect? And then lastly, kind of the umbrella over that, what's going to happen with org design, org structure, R&D, reimbursement, regulatory, all the components that are constantly shifting, and how do we get nimble and fast of what do we need to do? So those three panels, I think, are going to be great. We've had our prep calls, as you would imagine, with the panelists. They're super excited. They are so smart with so much expertise. They're just going to be fantastic. So really looking forward to all of them.
And do you have any insights on the patient perspective, the patient keynote that opens up? It's always I think it's like the grand finale of the fireworks at the start of the show. It just really
charges everything up. Fireworks.
That exactly. goes back to the tearjerker comment earlier.
We have a fantastic patient keynote. Mema Carmo is her name, and she is today the president and CEO of Tiger Lily Foundation. But her story is one of being diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 32 and realizing if she got through that, she wanted to give back and help the community and help with education and support and services in this space. She is a national speaker you just feel it with her. And so her story really resonates, I think, for a lot of women, and how she came out of it and what she's now done with it is so inspiring. So she's going to, again, knock it out of the park, as I understand all the patient keynotes have in the past. So we're excited.
Well, I know that I can't wait. Tom and I, we plan... This is one of the keystone events that we anticipate every year and we plan around. So we will be there, a front row for me, certainly. So thank you so much. And Yvonne, it's been so lovely having you with MedTech Women over the last 6 months. It's been a joy to partner with you and to learn from you. Do you have any last thoughts about MedTech Vision or about the MedTech Women organization?
Yeah, a couple things if I can. One, super excited to continue the mission of MedTech Women and really grow that organization. I think most folks know we've been around about 14 years, originally started as kind of a Bay Area kind of grouping community. And we've grown and grown. And one of my key tenets is to really make sure that expansion it's national, that we have communities in all major cities and states, and we're starting to see that. So really want folks to know that. We're expanding our programmatic offerings. I think we're doing our mentorship program is going to expand into the college arena to really bring those who are young into med tech and understand what a career in that might look like. So we're excited about that. But so much going on, and really, really hope people take a look at us and are interested in getting involved. We would be nothing without our volunteer structure and our sponsors. And yes, we love our partnership with you all as well. And so we really, we owe a lot to them. I owe a lot to them and want to keep growing that so we can continue to expand what we're doing. And then for MedTech Vision, I'm excited to see everybody there. I think it's going to be great. I want individuals to walk away and really feel like they've learned, they've gained, they've networked, they've made new friends, new colleagues, individuals who can help them and they can help. And just really looking forward to that whole vibe and output. So really appreciate it and appreciate the time talking to you guys today and the opportunity to talk a little bit about these, about MedTech Women and about MedTech Vision.
Well, we're excited to go out. It's a rare opportunity for Kayleen and I to be at a conference and not running it. It's a great opportunity for us to get together and just relax and connect with some great people. And just looking at your lineup of speakers, and I know it reflects the folks who'll be in the audience as well. You've got every major med tech there. So kudos to the organizers for getting all the right folks in the room. And we're really grateful to have the opportunity to meet with everybody. And it's also, frankly, Kayleen and I also take it the day before to kind of have a little strategy session. We live on different coasts, so to get the same geography is a special treat for us. So if folks want to, and they should want to, when folks register, make sure you go to medtechwomen.org. Go to medtechwomen.org, find the events tab at the top. You'll see the MedTech Vision 2025 button. Push on that, and then along the left side, you'll see an opportunity to buy tickets. Kayleen and I, again, can't speak highly enough of the event, and we'd really like to see you there. And I'd like to echo Kayleen's thanks for your partnership, the partnership with MedTech Women. It's an honor of ours to work with you folks. And we're looking forward to hopefully helping you make a difference in the future. Thanks for joining us in the podcast.
Thank you so much, Tom. Kayleen, we'll see you soon.
All right. Well, we can't wait to see folks at MedTech Vision. Now, Kayleen, it's my turn to do an interview. I'm very excited about this conversation I had with Tatiana Alexandrova. She is the CEO of Subsense. Subsense, once again, is a cool BCI company that is taking a very different approach to giving access to the brain. And Tatiana herself has a very interesting story. She came over to the U.S. from Ukraine, and we talked about how she's sort of coping with all that's gone on over there. So Tatiana's got a great story to tell. And Subsense is one of those really fascinating BCI companies that we hope can really bring some relief to brain-related conditions and disorders going forward. So let's hear from Tatiana Alexandrova. Again, she's the CEO of Subsense. Well, Tatiana Alexandrova, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tom. Nice to see you here.
Nice to unpack this company you're leading called Subsense. It's certainly interesting and is got a unique take to the BCI sort of approach. And we'll get into all of that in a moment. But I want to unpack your background a little bit. How did you find your way to lead these companies? I wouldn't say that you've really found your way into medtech. Would you consider yourself a medtech person or sort of a neuro person?
No, not really. Not a medtech. 100% a neuro person. Yeah. And as you mentioned, this my path may be not so usual, and I'm a serial BCI entrepreneur. I don't know, maybe I'm the only one in the world for now. So this is my second brain-computer interface company. And the story started 7 years ago when I was lucky enough to meet my previous co-founder in Nary. And we wanted to develop something big, something impactful, and we want to put our impact to the new technological revolution. Mm-hmm. And we started to do it without like any scientific background of me or him. And we started to discover this area. And and eventually this company still exists. It's super successful, selling devices all over the world, but it was completely non-invasive. Mm-hmm. And then 4 years later, I decided that I want to go deeper, deeper into the brain, deeper into the science, and founded Substance.
Let's look at NIRI a little more closely. So take me back to those early moments. I mean, did you just sort of sense that mankind is sort of at a precipice, that like we're at a point where the digital world and the material world are going to start to intertwine a little more tightly? What was it about that that energy that kind of drew you in and that convinced you to commit your life to this?
Yeah. First of all, I didn't know that I will commit my life to this.
And you haven't yet. You've got time. So.
I haven't yet. Yeah. But 7 years later, here I am.
Yeah.
Secondly, I guess I always been a dreamer. And when I was a kid, when somebody asked me like who I want to become, like the teacher or professor or, I don't know, the astronaut, whatever, I never could have picked, because the life is so exciting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to live multiple lives simultaneously, to be honest. And I just remembered recently that it was so cool to remember that. And basically, this fantasy led me to the creation of brain-computer interface, because if we will jump in for a second, like in 10, 20 years forward, maybe 30 years, I believe that eventually we will connect with with AI and with the digital world. Our brain will connect, and I believe that in our lifetime, or maybe the next generation, we can achieve the digital immortality and living many lives simultaneously. So it's all about like fantasy from the one side. But then when you started to work closely on that, you understand that, yes, it's like super far from now, but actually there is something that might be achieved. Like if you divide it to the small steps, you can see this, the end and the tunnel that you are aiming for.
Let's back up a little bit further. You talked about growing up. Where did you grow up? Give us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I grew up in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. In the most beautiful city in the world, Odessa, on the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. Beautiful people, amazing food, sun, and great people there.
And how did you find your way to the States, and when?
First I moved to, in 2013, I moved to Russia, to Moscow, and I founded the company there, NIRI. And I moved to US when the war between Russia and Ukraine started, because the whole my family is still in Ukraine and I'm Ukrainian, so I couldn't imagine myself living there, unfortunately. And I moved to US, and I decided to immediately when the war started, and I decided that I want to continue working with brain computer interface, because back then I already felt that my heart is there. It was with BCI, but I decided to learn from, it's not a mistakes, but to learn what would I do differently this time, the second time. Mm-hmm. And that's why I decided to go deeper into the brain, more invasively.
Feel free not to answer this question, but how do you manage with all that's going on with Ukraine, with the invasion, and living your life here? Do you feel like you're existing in two different places? Talk about having multiple lives. I can't imagine you can leave that behind.
Yeah, but you know, unfortunately, human brain and consciousness can adjust. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible to say, but right now, when the bombs are coming to my native city, very close to my family, it doesn't impact me as well, as much as it was 3 years ago. It is just very, very irritating. And I just wanted all of it stop, because it's nonsense. It's like, it's insane that it's going on, you know, especially like developing the new generation of technology in Silicon Valley. And from the one like side of my life, right? And from the other side, there is a war. Yep. And it's just insane.
That's an interesting point, though. It is scary how used we get to things, and how something that was previously unthinkable is something we manage every day now, and we don't even think twice about it. So I guess that talks a bit about brain plasticity. But moving into NIRI, though, with NIRI, you were producing more exterior headbands and things like that. Looking at the website, I mean, what function did those perform? What benefits did they offer to users?
Yeah, it was a great, it is still a great company, I guess. We developed completely non-invasive BCI. It was like a headset and a band. Mm-hmm. And the first device that we developed, like totally from scratch without knowing anything about BCI, we developed the EEG-based device implemented into virtual reality headset, because 6 years ago, it was much easier to sell virtual reality headset than the brain-computer interface. Like, what is that, right? And even now, a lot of people never heard of BCI, but 6 years ago, it was even more nonsense. We started to our first, to be honest, I'm not following about the current products of this company mm-hmm. right now. But when I was there, the first product that we developed was a device that will increase cognitive capabilities, abilities of kids. And we were selling these devices, so EEG-based BCI implemented into virtual reality headset, and we were selling it to schools and mm-hmm. educational centers. So the idea was that in the virtual reality headset, which itself entertaining for kids, right? It's fun. You're having some like a quiz, like 2 + 2, and there is a multiple answers, and you need to focus your attention on the correct answer without joystick, without anything, just your attention. And we didn't have any eye trackers in our headset.
Oh, interesting.
It was important. And the correct answer, they were blinking. And when the kid focusing their attention, we could catch the P300 feedback in the visual cortex. And we can say that this person, this kid is looking to this answer. The accuracy was pretty high. The accuracy was like 98% most of the times. And it was entertaining. Kids had fun. It works really well for in educational process because they were very engaged. That's what we were selling. It was a lot of after that, it was a lot of products, if I remember correctly, regarding meditation, focus, and mm-hmm. all of this kind of stuff.
Okay. So now you've moved on to, or now you're at Subsense. Talk a bit about the origin here. You've had that first experience with Neri. Were you certain you were moving into, I guess, a deeper application of BCI, and how did you find your way to the Subsense approach, which is fascinating.
Thank you. I hope everything will work as we expected. It will really be fascinating.
Everyone does.
Yeah. When I started to do my second attempt to a brain computer interface, I realized that I'm more followed by a dream of it's a very bad association with a Black Mirror TV show, because usually the end is very badly there. But when we're talking about really real brain computer interface, like merging with AI, everything that Ray Kurzweil is talking about, I realized that with the completely non-invasive brain computer interface, EEG based, we will not achieve that because the signal is very noisy. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that it will change within the next decade or maybe never. I don't know. I have no idea how to change that. And I was trying to find the way, how can we get the same accuracy as invasive brain computer interface? Because, of course, my path crossed with different invasive companies and professors, and I know a little bit about that. But then I realized that, okay, I don't want to do invasive because it will limit our audience a lot, and if we are focusing on the healthy individuals, not just medical applications, we need to do something that you and I will easily do, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that healthy people just for fun will do a brain surgery. It's like, it's weird, right? And I was trying to find the way, of course, together with my scientific team, I was trying to find the way. Where is how to find this balance between having the same accuracy as invasive, surgically invasive brain computer interface, but make it non-surgical.
Mm-hmm.
And we read a lot of literature. We talked to a lot of labs, professors, ideas, read a lot of different scientific backgrounds. And then we found the way that there is an idea of nanoparticles-based brain-computer interface. And we read about it somewhere in the articles. And we started to think about it, and we started to evaluate this idea with the different professors and labs around the world, because it's a very multidisciplinary task, right? It's a chemistry, it's physics, it's neurophysiology, it's nanotechnology, it's a very complex thing. And we wanted to understand that we're not breaking any physics laws, because if we are, then we need to just forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, after talking with more than 60 or 70 different labs and professors and people who understand something about these areas, and understand a lot, actually, we realized that we're not breaking any physics law. And we actually was even more sure that it's feasible, that we can do that. And it's a matter of time. And of course, the great people who can execute that. And and we decided to try it out. And with this research, we found two other collaborators, and I can tell later about them more, who really believe in this idea. And we work together with them based on their background intellectual property. And now we are working to develop this nanoparticles-based BCI.
Well, talk about the let's first talk about the technology, the nanoparticles themselves. How are they constructed? What are the elements, and how are they uniquely suited for this application?
Yeah, sure. First of all, it's important to understand that it's two types of nanoparticles, completely different, and they're not interfering with each other at all. And the first type of nanoparticles is plasmonic nanoparticles, and we use these nanoparticles for neural reading. And how does it work? First of all, let me tell you how it comes to the brain. So imagine it's a very, very tiny things. You basically know how nanoparticles can look like. And they're coming to your brain through your nose, so you're inhaling them. And then, through olfactory nerve, it's coming to olfactory bulb in your brain. And then with a special device, electrical fields, we are leading these nanoparticles, totally safe, leading to the part where the nanoparticles should stay. They can be around the whole brain. It depends on the application that we want to do right now, because of course we're gonna start with one application, and then we will increase the amount of applications, because eventually we are building not applications, we are building the platform, because we see our company as a platform, as a solution that will allow other companies and entrepreneurs, the future entrepreneurs, to build their application based on these nanoparticles. That's exactly what we're building. But the first application will be built by us, of course. So the nanoparticles come to your brain through your nose. We are leading them to the certain part on the brain where it needs to be. They're very safe. They're very stable. And then, depends on the nanoparticles itself, we can do a certain actions. Now let's talk about nanoparticles itself. So the first one is plasmonic nanoparticles. It's gold nanoparticles covered with an electrochromic polymer. And nanoparticles works not by their own, but with a headset on your head. So you're wearing a headset, and we're trying to make it as small as possible. It's 100% will be portable, so you don't need to go to the clinic or somewhere. You can wear it wherever you want. That's the initial idea. And the headset they affect the nanoparticles with a near infrared light. It's sending the near infrared light to these nanoparticles covered with electrochromic polymer. Mm-hmm. And then the headset expecting that the near infrared light with a certain frequency will go back. And when next to these nanoparticles there is a neuron activity, the frequency is changing on these nanoparticles. So that's how we know that in a certain area, there is the activation in the brain.
Hmm. So will the role of the nanoparticles, a few questions, will they be to just receive energy from an external device, or will they, are they transmitting data as well? Are they?
So if you take off the headset, mm-hmm. nothing happened.
Okay.
They're not powering itself. They're just like nothing, just zero. That's the idea, that if you want to be disconnected completely, just take off your headset. Nothing then happen.
Mm-hmm.
But important thing that there is another type of nanoparticles for neurostimulation.
Okay.
And they were completely different, and they're different itself. So the second type of nanoparticles, it's magneto-electrical nanoparticles. And the way how it works, it comes to your brain the same way on the certain area. And then the headset affect with the magnetic fields to this magneto-electrical nanoparticles. And there is a piezoelectric effect. So when we affect nanoparticles with magnetic fields, the nanoparticles are deforming, and when they are deforming, they produce electricity, and they affect the neurons around them on the certain area. That's how we can both read and stimulate the neurons in the brain.
So where are you in the testing of these nanoparticles in terms of biocompatibility, and just how long do you expect that they'd be able to? I guess they're there permanently. You're not taking them out, right? I mean, there's not an opportunity.
They're not permanently.
They're not permanent. Okay.
They're explain. Not permanent. No, sure. yeah, they're not permanent because, first of all, because it's biology, and my scientific team will answer this question better. But from my understanding, that's the biology that's moving it out from our brain, nothing that is not natural. Secondly, we can tune them. And we can tune them, depends on what we want. We can tune them to stay there for 7 days, for 10 days, 20 days, 60 days, it depends. And right now we're focusing from 20 to 60 days. So people do not need to frequently refill them in the brain, right? But let them stay not that long that it would be terrifying. I don't know, because some people just don't like anything weird in their body. I can relate.
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled about it either.
Yeah.
So, but how are they? Are they removed naturally, or are they removed as a, what would the plan be? I know we're really early on in this, but what would how would these be removed from the body?
The plan is naturally, but we will see. Maybe we need to add a special, like a cleanup, you know, to make sure that everything really goes out. But I think we can answer this question a little bit later on the way.
Well, let's talk. No, please.
Answering to your previous question regarding biocompatibility, of course, this is our number first priority. And if it's not biocompatible, it doesn't work. We're in the testing right now, and all the preliminary tests saying that all good, like we're good to go. And that's very promising.
And looking at your website, and you have your roadmap clearly illustrated there. You're in the very early stages of this, and you're looking, commercialization is in the next decade, in the 2030s. You've got a long way to go. So do you see this as sort of a moonshot project? I mean, it's like you're taking the shot now to build sort of the next iteration of BCI, and in the meantime, sort of the traditional implanted BCIs will sort of lay the groundwork for you to set the stage at the time you'll be ready, 8 to 10 years from now, whatever the time frame is? Or do you see this as a completely alternative path for BCIs? You're going to create something different from what other companies are proposing?
That's a great question. First of all, the first answer regarding the moonshot, yes, it's a moonshot. Yeah. And the word moonshot is literally, like, you can hear it in our company almost every day.
Okay.
Yesterday, I guess it was said like 15 times.
put a quarter in the jar every time someone says moonshot. Yeah,
that's true. That's about the first part of the question. The second part of the question, you were asking, if I understood correctly, that is it something like a very new approach or a parallel approach? The answer is yes and yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do I mean by that? With a tremendous respect to all of the companies in this area, and I really see that, at least for now, nobody's competing. Like, we're helping each other to grow the industry. Mm-hmm. Because the industry is really small in terms of amount of companies who can create that, because it's a very, very... one of the investors told me, I love this quote, it requires a lot of patient capital. And I love it. Unfortunately, it requires a lot of patient capital. And that's why, of course, it's limit the amount of, not only that, but that's also limit the amount of companies who can develop that. And I believe that all the companies who started much earlier, they're making the path for everybody else, including our company. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, if everything that we're claiming will work as we plan it to work, that I can see it as more, a lot of traditional BCI companies, they are making like a wired phone, and we're creating a smartphone. Mm-hmm. That's how I compare ourselves as a completely new approach. Then why I said that the second part of the question is yes as well, that it's a parallel path, because it depends on the applications. Because, of course, our technology may have a lot of limitations as well. For example, one of the limitations for neuro reading, we're not, at least for now, we're not able to get deeper than 3 centimeters. Sorry, okay, for my centimeters. we're not able to get deeper. But for example, alternative, like more traditional brain computer interface company, they can. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the application. If we're talking about medical application, I can easily see that some medical application will be executed much better with the traditional approach than with ours. But I also can see that, like, maybe it's a bold to say, but 80%, maybe 70% of something that already is executing, we can cover it better. Mm-hmm. First of all, because of the non-surgical approach, and that's a lot.
Well, final question, just sort of looking ahead. Let's assume the patient's capital is well invested, and things work out. What does Subsense look like as a company? Is your primary services deliver, will they be medical? Will you be restoring, you hope, vision? Will you be treating dementia? You've got a very, I think, ambitious list of things you'd like to do, including, you know, creating neural interfaces, hand-free interfaces with devices and things like that. What does Subsense look like if things work out as you, I hope, envision?
We have a very clear product roadmap. Mm-hmm. And of course, 100% our North Star is to create the safe, efficient brain-computer interface for healthy individuals to merge technology and the brain. Mm-hmm. But of course, to get there, we need to do some steps, very important steps. And the first step would be the medical application. So for example, in a year and a half, maybe I hope even earlier, we can show in mice how we can read the signal from the brain, stimulate it, and treat one of the symptoms of either Parkinson or the epilepsy, and then include more neurodegenerative diseases. Mm. So answering to your question, the first application would be medical, because because we can, because we, this is the part of the process to get to this North Star. We must do that. The perfect plan is that we are creating the platform. We create the first medical application, and then we will let other companies to build more medical products based on our platform. But we are going to our North Star.
So you're building the using medical applications to sort of build the highway, and then once the highway is built,
correct,
then others can use your road, basically.
That's right.
All
right.
That's
exactly what we're doing.
Interesting technology. I'm not a fan of implanting things in my brain, so I'll be hoping you folks can figure it out. But you're right with medical. Medical, there's a cost and benefit. We have to weigh the cost, but we have to look at the benefits. And there's a lot of horrible diseases that could be treated with these devices. So 100%. I think, to your point, we're all pulling for all of the groups in the BCI area, and it's exciting times. Tatiana, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Tom. It was a pleasure to be here with you.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Kayleen Brown is back at work putting together our future episodes of our Device Talks Podcast Network. Please do us the favor of subscribing to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode. You can do that on any major podcast player. Please share this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast on LinkedIn. And when you do, tag me, tag Kayleen Brown, tag Chris Newmarker of Mass Device, and connect with us as well. We love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. And we hope you'll be part of our MedTech conversations. You can do that by following us on LinkedIn. You can follow Device Talks. You can follow Mass Device. We'd love to have you as part of our talks on those LinkedIn pages. Finally, of course, don't forget to join us at Device Talks West. It's happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Go to west.devicetalks.com to register. Well, that's it. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.